Last weekend, it was wonderful. My daughter, Kyrie, went to school in Chicago, and she met a young man there, so they're living in Chicago. And my son, John, decided to go to school in Chicago, and my daughter, Lydia, went to school in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and met a man there that she married, and so now they're living in the suburb of Minneapolis, St. Paul. So for us to see all our family, we have to either fly them all here or we got to fly there. So we did that. It was last weekend. It was wonderful. And my daughter said, "Dad, we're going to have so much fun while we're in Chicago. We're going to go to downtown Chicago." I'm like, "Great. What are we going to do there?" She said, "We're going to go see all the Macy's windows." Have you ever been to the Macy's windows in Macy's in downtown Chicago? They take and they decorate the windows, and then people walk around and look at the windows. Except that it was Saturday after Thanksgiving, and it was a beautiful day outside for Chicago. I think it was like in the 60s or something like that. And it appears that all entire of Chicago decided to go look at the Macy's windows. At this, we couldn't see them. We could not see the windows. Very frustrating. The Cubs won the World Series this year, right? And they decided to have a big downtown celebration. And according to the internet, which, of course, it's the internet, so it's true, right? It's like the fifth largest crowd of ever in the history of mankind descended on downtown Chicago. The sixth largest crowd was last Saturday. It was just so curious. Well, let's go to Kris Kringle Nacht. So Kris Kringle Nacht is in downtown Chicago, and they set up these little cute little booths. And it's based on this 500-year-old tradition from Nuremberg, Germany, and you can go and you can just buy stuff. And so we're walking there, and I'm smelling those roasted nuts. You know what I'm talking about? And I'm getting closer, and I'm getting all these smells of my favorite Christmas foods. We get there, and all the Macy's people were saying they were there too. It was horrible. And the really horrible thing is that God's so mean to me sometimes. He fills my nostrils with these beautiful smells, and I want to get these, and I could see them, and the crowd's like pushing me. Never got them. Very upsetting. But I was with my family, and it was wonderful, and it was a great time, and Chicago was kind of a fun place to be. So anyway, how many of you are just like the greatest Christmas shoppers of all time? You know, you plan early, and yep, I see a few hands. My congratulations to your family. And how many of you are just the worst Christmas shopper? You wait till my condolences to your family. I used to be that way. I was the worst Christmas shopper ever. We had this agreement that Jennifer would do most of the Christmas shopping, but then I had to get Jennifer, right? And, you know, it seems like a pretty decent agreement, actually, when you think about it. But it's hard because, you know, I'm such a procrastinator. And then something happened a few years ago that was like the best thing ever. Amazon.com is exactly right. It is, oh my goodness, it has saved the marriage. It has saved the children. Because I hate going shopping, but I love shopping on Amazon.com. You get to see a picture of it, you get to read all the reviews of it, there's no crowd, and then there's two-day shipping with Amazon Prime. Unless you're thinking and hemming and hawing about it, and you go to push the button, it's like, sorry, it's sold out this year, you have to wait till next year, which does happen sometimes. Anyway, we're going to continue our sermon series. We're going to talk about Christmas shopping, of all things. This is a sermon series we started last week, and it's basically this. Christmas, we all know, is a noun, right? It's the time of Jesus' birth, and it's the time that we all get together with family and friends. It's the time that the church celebrates God incarnate coming to dwell among us. But Christmas can also be an adjective, because when Christmas is put in front of another noun, then Christmas becomes an adjective, like Christmas bells, or Christmas carols, or Christmas season, or Christmas people, or Christmas shopping. And this sermon series is basically asking, what does it mean to be a Christian as an adjective during the Christmas season. What does that mean? And we're kind of exploring that a little bit. And today, we're going to look at Christmas shopping. Because some people love shopping, right? I mean, they're not like me. They just absolutely shop. People love shopping, but for many people, Christmas actually is very, very stressful. That's me. Some people want to reach, they want the best deals, right? They look and they look and they just want to make sure that whatever they're paying for the price for the thing it is, they want to make sure they're getting the best price ever. And then the day after Thanksgiving, a lot of people wait in line for hours and hours and they go in and they have arguments and fights and all that sort of thing. It's terrible. Some people want to make sure they get the best presents, right? They want to make sure that they get exactly what people want. So that when they open up on Christmas Day, that those people are pleased from the Christmas present. But there's a lot of people that want to find the gift that's perfect because they want to look good. That when they give a gift to somebody, that other people say, man, that was a good gift, and man, you're awesome at shopping, you know? And sometimes we put so much pressure on ourselves at Christmas time. This comparison and competition that happens is magnified at Christmas. You understand that? We're always comparing of ourselves to other people, and we always have things in our hearts that aren't necessarily pure, but when Christmas comes, it's like a spotlight is shining in our heart, and it magnifies whatever feelings or emotions are going. And Christmas then can become, or has the potential to be, a very, very difficult time for a lot of people. And so we're going to talk about that this morning, because Paul explains why that is in our epistle lesson from today, from 2 Corinthians 10. So you have to give you a little bit of background about Paul. Paul preached in Corinth, set up the church in Corinth, and then he went on his merry way, and he thought the church was doing great. He thought, man, this church got some pretty good people in it, and I'm hearing good things, you know? And so he moves away, goes on to plant the next church. Then all of a sudden, he gets word back that the people in Corinth have just tanked. There's animosity, there's jealousy, there's people jockeying for power and position. And Paul's like, how is this possible? And he kind of does some investigation and finds out that people are just comparing themselves to everyone else. That I'm better than that person, and so I should lead this congregation. I'm certainly better than Paul ever was, so all these different things are coming out now that Paul's there, and Paul just can't believe it. And he shakes his head, and he writes this letter to Corinthians saying, stop it. Stop comparing yourself to each other, or comparing yourself to me. You know, they were also saying things like, you know what, Paul was not a good Christian. He was all about, the flesh and the worldly things, and he wasn't, you know, as deeply spiritual as I am. Well, you know, Paul was a pretty impressive guy, I would say, and comparing yourself to Paul is not the best thing in the world to do. But Paul writes, in response to the Corinthians, chapter 10, verse 12, he says, not that we dare to classify or compare ourselves with some of those who are commending themselves, but when they measure themselves by one another and compare themselves with one another, they are without understanding. Now, that's kind of difficult language from Paul. But basically what he's saying is stop comparing yourselves to everybody else. Don't do that. You're sinful people. Stop comparing yourself to other sinful people. That's not very good. You know, we know that competition can be good. I know that there's this desire to kind of reduce competition in some aspects of our life. But for me, personally, competition is good. I don't mind a good competition. I don't mind that I'm running a race against somebody else because it helps me actually push myself harder and do better because, you know, all of us have a little bit of competitive spirit in us. And that's okay. But in the church, when we compare ourselves to other people in the congregation or in the church-wide church, it can have some deadly and disastrous consequences. And here's a couple reasons why. First of all, not all of us have the same gifts, right? Some of us are gifted in this area, and some of us are gifted in this area. And if you start comparing yourself and your gifts with other people and their gifts, you're going to find yourself in a world of hurt. We know that in Ephesians 4, Paul says that some of them are called to be apostles, some are prophets, some evangelists, some shepherds, some teachers. And if you're one of those things and not one of the other things, and you start comparing yourself to everybody else, you're going to start getting into a world of hurt. We shouldn't do that. You know, I once worked with a guy, true story, and his father was not a Christian. And this guy kind of dropped out of college and was kind of trying to figure out what the next step in his life was going to be. He thought he might go back to college or whatever, but he was deeply spiritual, deeply spiritual. Even though his father wasn't Christian, he had, you know, been going to church and doing things for a long time. And he had a couple things going on in his life that made him very, very spiritually deep, wonderful, deep, spiritual Christian guy. But, you know, to the world around, it looked like he was, you know, to his dad and his mom, he looked like he was a total failure. And I just would shake my head, and I wanted to go find his mom and dad and say, don't you understand what a deeply spiritual guy, young man this is? I mean, I would love for my daughter to, you know, to be married to this guy. Anyway. Another thing, Christians look at failure differently. We look at failure differently. You know, and the world knows this. The world knows that failure is a step to a learning curve, right? You might fail here, but you're going to learn from it, and you're going to move on. As a matter of fact, the playwright and author William Saroyan said, good people are good because they come to wisdom through failure. We get very little wisdom from success. But Christians, there is no such thing as failure. When you are in the kingdom of God, all your life is for the glory of God. Even the things that you think are failures aren't failures. We know from Romans 8:28 where God says that all things work for good for those who love God who are called according to his purposes. And if all things work for good, that means even the failures in your life are working good for God somewhere, somehow. We may not understand how that is, but it's not failure. How could you possibly be a failure when Jesus Christ loves you and died for you? But in the church, competition and comparison with others ultimately leads to boasting, and then boasting leads to the sin of pride. And that's basically what Paul's talking about here in chapter 10. The ones trying to stir up trouble in Corinth said Paul was boastful. But Paul had every reason to be boastful. I mean, he was a great man, planted a lot of churches, had the vision from God on the road to Damascus. Yeah, he was a guy that could boast. But Paul talks about boasting in the rest of chapter 10, and it's some lessons for us. First of all, verse 13, but we will not boast beyond limits. We will boast only with regard to the area of influence God assigned for us to reach even to you. In other words, boasting has limits. All right, you might be good in one thing, but that doesn't necessarily make you good in everything. How many of you know people that are good in one area of their life, right? And so they infer that because they're good in that one area of their life, they must be good at everything. And so they're giving you their opinion on everything. And they're boasting at everything. And you say, hey, buddy, gal, you're not good in everything. We know that happens all the time. How many times have you seen, who should I pick on today? I could pick on Hollywood or politicians or the church. You know who I'm talking about. People who think they're good in everything. And they're not. Paul says, it's okay to boast in the areas that God has gifted you in boasting. But don't assume because you're good in that area that you're good at everything, okay? There are limits to your boasting. Paul goes on, verse 15. We do not boast beyond limit in the labors of others. You know, it is never wrong to boast about other people. It is always good to boast about other people. If you see somebody doing a good job, it is okay to go up and say, hey man, you're doing a great job. If you see somebody that's gifted in one area, it's very good. Actually, it's fantastic for you as a Christian to go and say, hey, God has gifted you in this area. I've noticed it. There's nothing wrong with boasting in other people at all. People love to hear the things that they're good at. And they love to have that affirmation. Then verse 17. Let the one who boasts boast in the Lord. Let the one who boasts boast in the Lord. Ultimately, what kills comparisons is perfection. Because when we get competitive in our comparison, we compare that which is imperfect to that which is imperfect. And we try to figure out which is a little less imperfect. But Christ changed all that. Christ levels all our comparisons because no one compares to Him. When He invites us to find the joy and the blessing and the hope, it's in Him. And then He boasts in us because we are His precious possession. God boasts in us. It's like when people come up to God and God's like pulls out His wallet and says, "Look at that. That's my child or daughter. That's my guy. That's my girl." And because of Jesus, God does that to each and every one of us. And for that, it matters that God boasts in you. Verse 18, "For it is not the one who commends himself who is approved, but the one who the Lord commends." And we've all, because of Jesus Christ, been commended. A story I wanted to read to you. One day a teacher asked her students to list the names of the other students in the room on a sheet of paper. And leaving a space between each name, she told them to think of the nicest thing they could say about each other, and the classmates wrote it down. It took the remainder of the class period to finish the assignment, and as the students left the room, each one handed in the paper, and that Saturday, the teacher wrote down the name of each student on a separate piece of paper, and then she listed what everyone else had said about that student. On Monday, she gave each student his or her list, and before long, the entire class was smiling. "Really?" she heard them whisper. "I never knew that I meant so much to anyone else. And I didn't know others liked me so much," were most of the comments. No one ever mentioned the papers again to her. The teacher never found out if they discussed them in class or after class, but it didn't matter. She finished the exercise and students were happy. That group of students moved on, and several years later, one of the students was killed in Vietnam. And his teacher attended the funeral of that special student. She had never seen a serviceman in the military coffin before. He looked so handsome and so mature. Their church was packed with his friends, and one by one, those who loved him took a last walk by his coffin. The teacher was the last one, and as she stood there, one of the soldiers who acted as a pallbearer came up to her. "Were you Mark's math teacher?" she asked. She nodded, "Yes." Then he said, "Mark talked about you a lot." And after the funeral, most of Mark's former classmates went together to the luncheon. Mark's mother and father were there also, wanting to speak with his teacher. "We want to show you something," his father said, taking out a wallet out of his pocket. "They found this on Mark when he was killed. We thought you might recognize it." Opening the billfold, he carefully removed two worn pieces of notebook paper that had obviously been taped, folded, and refolded many times. The teacher knew, without looking, that the papers were the ones which she had listed all the good things each of Mark's classmates said about them, about him. "Thank you so much for doing that," Mark's mother said. As you can see, Mark treasured it. And all of Mark's former classmates started to gather around. Charlie smiled rather sheepishly and said, "I still have my list. It's in the top drawer of my desk at home." Chuck's wife said, "Chuck asked me to put it in our wedding album." "I have mine too," Marilyn said. "It's in my diary." And then Vicky, another classmate, reached into her pocketbook, took out her wallet, and showed her worn and frazzled list to the group. "I carry this with me at all times," Vicky said. Without batting an eyelash, she continued, "I think we all saved our lists." And tears rolled down the eyes of the humble teacher. You know, affirming others is a great comparison. We're all imperfect people. When it comes time to Christmas shopping, enjoy the season. Don't compare yourself with others. But know that God has compared you and has found you His most precious child and has a whole list of things that He loves about you. In Jesus' name, amen.